Shilling Show continues here. It is a Tuesday edition of the program. David Murata joins us, the president of Murata Wealth Management, online at muratonmoney.com. And it's a great resource. You visit over there and find articles on lots of great topics. Today, we're talking about the subject of budgeting. And we're not talking about the county budget or the school's budget, although that would be a good conversation sometime. But we're talking about you and your family. David, welcome back to the Shilling Show. Oops, let's see what's going on. There we go.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All righty. So I guess we had to start out at the very basic question is, what is a budget? I mean, some people may have different ideas, and I want to set the stage for what we're talking about today.
Yeah, a budget is how we allocate our income to the things we value. It's the best sort of definition that I know. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to be intentional about your income and spend it on the things that you value most. And they say you can tell what someone values by how they spend their money and how they spend their time, because that's a lot more than how they, you know, what they give lip service to. And so sometimes the cost of impulse purchases that you're not thinking through is really the failure to meet long-term goals. If you want to be generous, you need to have something allocated to generosity, because that way it won't be, am I going to be generous? It's mm-hmm. how am I going to be generous with this money? And if you want to have something allocated to education or movies or eating out or frivolous, you're just trying to set aside the right amount of money for how you value various things. And most people don't do this. They don't do it. They don't do it explicitly. And if you can imagine, I like to use the analogy of you know, mindless spending is like mindless eating. Imagine if whatever you saw and it looked good, you stuffed in your mouth.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And what are we going to do? We're going to eat terrible food. It's all going to be, you know, high sugars and stuff like that. If we're not mindful of what we eat, we end up having health problems. If we're not mindful of how we spend money, it just won't get spent the right way. And I think this is especially true if you're in a family and you're running a family that the husband and wife are sort of partners in a business. And can you imagine being in a business where you never went over financial stuff with your partner?
You'd be in for a lot of trouble and really a lot of hard feelings as well.
Yeah, it would be a disaster. And so husband and wife, I think, should at least have one time that they sit down and they talk about finances on a regular basis. Monthly is great. My wife and I did that when we were first getting started. You know, quarterly is, mm-hmm. is good. You know, if you've been married 35 or 40 years, maybe annually is good enough. But especially if you've been married less than 10, I think it's really important to figure out how your spouse is thinking and how you're thinking and what you want to accomplish with your life together.
You know, it's interesting that you bring this up in the interpersonal dynamics of family budgeting. I remember we were preparing to get married years ago, and one of the things that they wanted us to talk about in the premarital program we were going through and to spend a lot of time on was money.
Yeah, money ends up being a factor in most of the divorces that happen. Mm. And it's not really because money is the issue. It's because how you spend your money shows your values, and the values are what are at stake. And also, there's nothing more romantic than actually talking about your values and trying to plan a life together. And so if you're not doing that together, you're basically drifting apart. And drifting apart is sort of the norm in marriage unless you're working on it. So, you know, if you think, golly, you know, I'm working on my marriage and it just seems like everyone else is just, it's just breezy. Well, working on your marriage is actually what makes a good marriage. And that's a constant process even after 35 years of marriage.
You know, very much like those at the county level, Dianthe and the pickpockets and the rest of them, people, I think naturally, at least a lot of people, are budget adverse. They do not want to be constrained.
Yeah, and there is nothing, you know, a lot of people feel very happy that they're living inside their budget. There is nothing proud of consuming every dime of income and putting nothing away. And that's true whether you're a family or you're a government agency. You know, you shouldn't be proud of not having extra money around. And if you're in the middle of a budget crisis, be it political or personal, mm-hmm. That's really a sign that you've done something wrong in terms of your planning, because your planning really should account for unknown emergencies.
So how do people, and we've got just a couple minutes for the break here, how do people take that step? Let's just say that they're fearful of being maybe exposed before their spouse, or they're fearful of some event down the line that they're planning on buying a boat, and they think, gosh, if we budget for that, or if we try to put everything in a budget, I'm never going to get my boat. Therefore, let's just not do the exercise.
Yeah, obviously the first thing is if you have a spouse is to talk with your spouse and say, look, if we're going to go down this budgeting line, we're going to have to be absolutely completely honest with one another. And it's going to have to be okay if I come home and I say, you know what, I spent money today and I broke the budget. It was a budget buster. I didn't even talk to you about it ahead of time, and I should have, and all of that, and I did this. And then you have to decide what you're going to do is, you know, can you take it back? Should you take it back? All kinds of things like that. Because you really have to have those conversations. No one wants to do mindless spending, and no one wants to have those budget busters. My wife and I set a dollar amount when we were first married, and beyond that dollar amount, we could not spend it without talking to our spouse. And that really helped, because that way, you know, in the middle of an impulse purchase, one of the best ways of keeping a budget is to simply say, I'm going to wait 1 week. And inevitably, after a week, it's like, oh, I don't really want that anymore. I wanted it at the time. I wanted it in the moment. But I don't really want it. And just delaying 1 week will cut away about half of the mindless spending that you do. And it's a great way to do that. But when you're first starting out for a budget, I like to recommend that people do sort of the mini pre-budget. And that is simply write down for 1 month everything you spend.
And that's like writing down everything you eat.
Right.
Some people are like, I'm not sure I want to write that one down.
No, and that's the way dieting works. When you write down everything you eat, it suddenly makes you mindful. I had 3 cupcakes? Hold on a minute.
Oh, wow.
I can't believe I ate 3 cupcakes. Uh-huh. But yeah, I just sat there and ate 3 cupcakes without even thinking about it. That's ridiculous. I can't believe I did that. And that's what changes behavior is simply making yourself mindful of it does that. So if you write it down for a month, when my wife and I were first married, we kept our budget in a 3-ring binder, just a spiral bound notebook. And we had one page for every category, and we would write on the right category, we would write the date, the amount, and what we spent it on. And that made us very mindful of where our money was going and therefore how much things cost.
It is 12:28 here on The Shilling Show. Our guest is David Murata of Murata Wealth Management, 977-1070. If you have comments or questions regarding budgeting, we take your calls on the other side. It's very important, and really this whole issue of finances, as David said, really leads to a lot of marital problems if you don't work it out in advance. 977-1070. We'll be back on the other side with more of David Murata and budgeting benefits. The Shilling Show continues. It is a Tuesday edition of the program. Coming up in hour number 2, Joe Whited for Congress will be the first of 4 Republicans to visit with us for the remainder of the week, one per day through Friday, and then the convention on Saturday. We continue with David Murata on the topic of budgeting. He's online at muratahonmoney.com. All right, so let's talk about categories. You know, once we start getting into this and rationale for setting up a budget, because people may be overwhelmed. You talk about starting out with the budget, David, and just writing down what you spend. But what's after that?
Yeah, it's categories are completely up to the user how they want to break things down. But commonly, I like to put all of my regular expenses that never change in their own sort of categories because you can know exactly what the dollar amount is. And those are sort of fixed costs. Although I will say, fixed costs that happen every month are the best place to look for reductions. Mm. Because, if you have a cable package that's costing you $150 a month, that's $150 a month. That's huge. If you have some little online service that's costing you $5 a month, those build up after time. And there's a lot of little expenses or big expenses. And sometimes, simply by dropping some of the categories on your cable package or your phone package or your movie package or your app package or your whatever package, you can really save a lot of money. And I know in our firm, we are all frugal super savers who are talking about how to get, how to spend less money, right down to the point of having a conversation about what's the cheapest phone service to have.
Right.
And one of our staff members has a phone where if there's a wireless connection, it goes over the internet and is free.
Mm-hmm.
But it also has a roaming. So if you're out in the car and you need it, you can get it. And so they have almost a free phone. It's absolutely amazing. They only have to pay for incoming calls when they're out and about and they're roaming. But when they're in their house or they're at the office, the wireless picks it up and they get free phone calls.
This sounds like an Obama phone. I'm guessing it's not. There's free phones all over the place these days.
Yeah, this is at least free free to everyone, not just free to non-taxpayers.
Okay.
You know, but the typical categories, people split it down, you know, are food, housing, auto, insurance, you know, entertainment, clothing, medical, you know, miscellaneous, you know, savings, things like that, splitting it down. I will say there's one thing that may help save your marriage, and that is we have a category that we always recommend you put in your budget, his frivolous and her frivolous.
Walking around money. I
yeah, guess. A little yeah. tiny slice. We recommend 0.5% or 1% of your budget. You know, go in each, maybe 0.5% in each, or if you want to be really frivolous, put 1% in each. Mm-hmm. And this is money that this is stuff that your spouse would consider frivolous, and it's just ridiculous. But you want to be able to spend it anyway. And so if you can save it up, so long as it doesn't break the budget, and mm-hmm. you know, 1% or 0.5% is not nothing that's going to break the budget, but put some amount in there. And then if you want, you can increase that, but it will give you the idea that, you know, if you've got a baseball card collection that you want to keep up on, it puts limits on how much that's going to break the budget. Mm-hmm. And if you're trying to buy that, you know, rare Mickey Mantle baseball card, you might have to save up for a couple of years yeah. in order to purchase it. So those are the categories, you know, that people generally recommend.
Okay, so let's talk now about tracking these expenses. I know there's probably a lot of ways to do it. Some are easier than others. But for people who are looking to make this as painless as possible, how would you suggest?
Yeah, my wife and I use Quicken, which is mm-hmm. easy to do. That's good if one person keeps the budget. And right. it's good because you can download all of the credit card information and drop it straight into the budget. Mm-hmm. And so long as it's places you've already bought from, that place will always go into the same category. When we were first married, we had a notebook because then you have to write it all in the notebook. And so long as we both know where the notebook is, we would just get receipts for everything and write it in the notebook. That's mm-hmm. certainly a free way. Another way you can do it is you can get your money in cash and you can do the envelope system. Mm-hmm. And in the envelope system, you actually have an envelope for food. And when you go to the store, you take the food envelope and you spend money out of it. That's a very visual way to help you if you're having trouble visualizing and actually not spending money. When the envelope's empty, you can't spend any more money out mm-hmm. of that category. If you're more high-tech, there are some great apps that allow both you and your spouse on your iPad or your smartphone to have access to putting stuff in the budget, and you can put it in when you're out and about right there. So all of those are legitimate ways to do that. You know, I think if we had a to-do over and if we had smartphones, which we don't, mm-hmm. Because smartphones, data is how they really kill you on the phone service in terms of amounts. We have devices, but we don't have them on our phone. So if we had smartphones, I think the smartphone method where both husband and wife could put in things into the budget mm-hmm. would be probably the best way technology-wise.
You talked about an envelope of cash, and I want to talk about in the context of budgeting cash versus checks versus credit cards versus debit cards. Yeah, let's talk about the benefits and the drawbacks of each one of those.
Yeah, sure. So for safety reasons, we never recommend running a debit card as a debit card. If they get that access, there's no recourse. The money goes out and you mm-hmm. can't get it back. If you run it as credit, you can flip it over, call the 1-800 number, say I didn't make those purchases or they didn't give me what I bought, and you can challenge the purchases. I had one particularly bad vendor that I have now flipped my card over 3 times to call the 1-800 number, challenge the purchases, and I've won all 3 times mm-hmm. because they had overcharged a credit card. Had they done that on a debit card, there is no recourse. In terms of credit cards, if you're not mindful of your purchases, spending money on a credit card, you'll spend 2.5 times what it would take as cash or check. And there's just been study after study that's shown that if you're not mindful, which most people are not, mm-hmm. you'll spend more money with a credit card. If you have cash in your wallet and you see that cash coming out and you realize you actually have to be counting out, what, I bought lunch and it's $12? Mm-hmm. I didn't realize it was $12. Mm-hmm. Then suddenly you'll know what you're spending in various places, and so you spend less money. At a minimum, if you're trying to keep track of a budget, keeping the budget requires you to run the credit card and then get the receipt. And then when you're writing the receipt into the budget, you'll at least see, oh, my goodness, I can't believe that lunch was $12. I thought it was closer to $6. That's a more expensive place to eat, and I'm going to think about twice before I go there again. So that's the difference between cash or check. Some people really don't like credit cards because they get into credit card debt.
Yeah.
And if you get into credit card debt, you should cut up all your credit cards and pay everything in cash. Check is not a whole lot better because if you start bouncing checks, then there's a lot of expenses that go along with that. And I've been working with some clients who have trouble spending, and they're just as likely to bounce a check as they are to run up a credit card debt.
Let's talk about preparing for emergencies, because it's all good to budget, and I have this much for that. But an emergency, hey, I need a new roof on my house, or all of a sudden, unexpectedly, my car blew up, and I've got to make a big purchase of a vehicle. How do we plan for that?
Yeah, we recommend that people spend 65% of their take-home pay, and 35% has other uses that it goes to. The easiest way to automate that is to put your paycheck into a taxable investment account and then only transfer 65% each month down to your checking account. That makes the default savings for emergencies and investments and other things. And it therefore, when you get a raise, you automatically save the raise unless you proactively decide to increase your monthly transfer. But then of the 35% that's left over, we recommend 15% for your retirement savings. And that can either be through your 401k or it can be savings in, you know, in your own brokerage account or a Roth account. Then we recommend, as you suggested, 10% unknown unknowns.
Mm-hmm.
And we think of this as we have no idea what expense is going to hit, but whatever it is, I'll be ready for it with 10% of my budget. My wife and I have found that every single year of our marriage, we've had things that we've needed to spend money on that we did not know about. So for the young people out there who are graduating from college, your friends are going to get married. They're going to ask you to be in the marriage, in the wedding ceremony, and then you're going to have to fly to some place where they're currently living. You're going to have to stay in a hotel. You're going to have to rent a tux. And just being in their wedding is going to cost a tremendous amount of money. You should have a budget for that, but my guess is that most young people aren't actually going to budget for that. And so that's one of the things that the unknown unknown category is for. Or a family member dies, you need to fly to the funeral. Or the roof leaks, or your car breaks, or any number of things that might come up that you need to spend money on, y'all know that. And even later in life, then all of a sudden it's, oh my goodness, my daughter's getting married, I need to pay for a wedding, or I need to do something else that I haven't anticipated, or my kids need orthodontia. So wherever it is in your life cycle, there'll always be unknown unknowns, and we recommend 10% for that. And then that last 10% of the 35%, we recommend for generosity.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be to your church. It doesn't even have to be to nonprofits. It's just have 10%. If you want to be a generous person, set aside some money for it, because that's what it takes to be generous.
Mm-hmm.
And so set aside 10%. And maybe there's a coworker who can't afford to go out to eat with the gang and you just want to buy them a meal. Maybe someone you will meet actually has a problem that money can solve, and they didn't allocate 10% of their budget for unknown unknowns, and you can help them out with your 10% of generosity. So if you have that, then it's not, am I going to be generous, or even how much, because you've already decided what amount of budget to set aside. It's who am I going to be generous to, and that's just a much more open-hearted, less white-knuckled, whole hanging on to our money approach. And that will actually change your behavior, will change your heart at that point, your heart having set aside that amount of money for your behavior.
977-1070 is the phone number. It's 1247 here on The Shilling Show. We've got one segment left with David Marotta. When we come back on the other side, we're going to talk about which purchases bring the greatest satisfaction. How would you use your money if you had the choice and wanted to be satisfied? We'll get to that when The Shilling Show continues with David Marotta right after this. The final segment of this hour with David Marotta, talking about budgeting, the importance of it, the how-tos, the nuts and bolts. And so when you are going to spend your money, what are the things that bring people satisfaction? You know, I've seen people in their houses that have bought all these things and never even opened the box. They're just sitting there. They were excited to buy it, and then it was apparently useless to them. So yeah. Where does the satisfaction come from?
Yeah, the first thing I should say is that the poor buy things and their houses are cluttered with them. The middle class buy liabilities, boats, second houses, things that require upkeep and bring in no income, to which I'll probably add subscriptions. You know, they've got the big gym membership. They've got the big sports package. They've got the big, you know, just things that are going to charge them every month, whether they use them or not. And the rich actually buy investments for the most part, which is why they're rich. They buy things that, and an investment is not just something that's valuable. An investment is something that pays you money. So so that's sort of the definition. But then the things that are the most satisfying, there's a few principles. One principle is buying time is the best investment. Mm. So if you have money and you can buy time, it's worthwhile. If you think about a doctor who's very, very busy and his time is very valuable, or a lawyer, or anyone who's highly paid, for them to mow their own lawn or even to clean their own house is probably not a good use of time. Mm-hmm. It's better for them to have someone else do that. Mm-hmm. So when you're buying time to have someone else fix your car and things like that, when you're poor, you can't afford it because your hourly rate isn't worth that much. When you're rich, it actually doesn't make economic sense for you to do it because you can make more money at your trade because mm-hmm. you're specialized and you're such, your time is such so valuable. So buying time is one of the best investments. Second, buying experiences are generally more satisfying than stuff. Mm. So you buy stuff and it sits there. But if you buy an experience, especially if you make sure that you remember that experience and you treasure it, even better is buying an experience in the future mm-hmm. because the anticipation of looking forward to it for 6 months is very, very valuable. It's very satisfying, and it actually helps you appreciate it when it comes along.
Gosh, I know my kids are already talking about our Thanksgiving trip to the Outer Banks. They're already saying, hey, Daddy, how many months, how many days? They ask me almost weekly about that. So they're looking at that with great anticipation.
Yeah, and it actually, if you're going to take your kids somewhere exciting, it's almost better to tell them 6 months in advance mm-hmm. than announce it right beforehand so that they can anticipate it and really enjoy it.
Yeah.
And then spending money on other people is actually very satisfying. So spending money in terms of gifts and experiences for other people that you get to share in mm-hmm. is very satisfying. They've done study after study, and income is not the deciding factor on satisfaction. Having a certain amount of margin in your income is very satisfying. It brings an incredible peace of mind. Mm-hmm. And I've known people with incomes that are above $200,000 who have no margin in their life, and they're so miserable and unhappy because of the franticness of their lives. And then I've known people on very, very small budgets, but who save 10% and have the unknown unknowns, and they do those things, and they're very satisfied because they always have a little bit left over in case something comes up, and they have that peace of mind of knowing that they've got savings in the bank if they need it. And they're so happy when they have it, because when they need it, they need it. So the level of income generally beyond about $70,000 doesn't bring happiness, mm-hmm. but spending money on the things I just suggested actually does bring happiness. So money can enhance your happiness if it's in line with your values and if you put it toward the right things, but mindless spending certainly doesn't.
So how do people with inconsistent incomes, you know, who are working off commission, car salesmen, real estate, other people, artists and so forth, how do they deal with all this? Because their cash flow could vary from month to month.
Yeah, and this is a beautiful example of what we call the automatic millionaire. If you always put your paycheck in your investment account, and then you take as a draw what you know you're going to get, so maybe the lowest month's income is what you take as a draw, then you leave behind all of the excess there. Then you can purposefully spend out of the excess when it's there. But your regular expenses will be that monthly draw that you need to live on.
You know, I think in looking at this conceptually, just like discipline from a parent to a child, you know, kids feel so much better when there are boundaries there. And I would imagine that people are happier when they have boundaries to their spending, even if they're self-imposed.
Yeah, one of the best things about it is knowing you have that frivolous budget, when you spend that dollar, mm-hmm. your spouse doesn't argue with you. You don't argue with you. You feel really happy about the purchase. When you're having money troubles, every dollar, and you don't have a budget, every dollar is a battle and an argument with your spouse, because $1 frivolous is $1 too much. But when you have a budget, you only worry when you go over that budget. So long as you're buying food and it stays within the food budget, you're doing your job correctly, you're feeding the family, and what food purchases you make are less important because you've kept them under the budget.
David Morata, as always, thank you so much for this advice. I know it's helped a lot of people. And it's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Yeah, I just wanted to add one more thing, and that is if they need help with setting a budget, there's two ministries that are very good for budgeting. One is Crown Ministries at crown.org, and the other is Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University. Both of those have helped hundreds of thousands of families sort of set a budget and stay within it.
He's online at maradaonmoney.com, and David, we'll look forward to next time.
Thank you so much.
All right.